Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is my guest, and later, Diamond and Silk, and then 27 minutes of some of the most important historical information you'll ever hear that helps you understand how it is the communists have marched around the world and are now deep in the swamp in Washington. Watch this 6-minute clip, and we'll be right back with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry live. Since the end of World War II, America has not only increasingly surrendered to the Marxists at home, but willingly surrendered to them in Eastern Europe, China, North Korea, and Vietnam. The consequences of such surrender has led to America not only empowering our enemies, but in some cases, actually funding their regimes as they build sixth-generation warfare technology that America does not also possess at this time.
From a Moscow command center, Putin watched the hypersonic missile leave its launch tube and, according to the Russians, strike a target 3,700 miles away, declaring it invulnerable to intercept. Russia says it can be armed with a nuclear weapon and travel up to 20 times the speed of sound. Without confirming the results of today's test, the Pentagon has acknowledged that America is vulnerable.
We don't have any defense that could deny the employment of such a weapon against us.
Russia first touted their hypersonic missile in March with an animation showing warheads flying towards Florida.
The substitute for victory has led America to be viewed by our enemies as a nation of fools that can be counted upon to not fight, but to eagerly seek a compromise that almost always leaves our enemies advancing and America damaged and ever close to demise. The West was opened up to Russia and inflowed increased American financial aid and technology. In many regards, this is how Russia built one of the strongest militaries in the world with their sixth generation warfare. John Stormer summed it up this way, quote, "The rush to shore up Moscow's collapsing economy was not limited to the $8 billion in consumer goods the Reds purchased. High technology items essential to the Soviet military and space programs were included," end quote. While Russia was cheating on virtually every disarmament treaty we signed with them, America complied. The end result is Russia has military technology we cannot counter at this time and may not be able to counter for several years to come. But do we have several years? Yet there are those that declare that since America's economy is stronger than that of Russia, then we clearly must have a stronger military than Russia. Dr. Peter Pry explains why this is false.
And there's a lot of myth-making. I think it's psychological denial behavior that, oh, we don't have to worry about Russia because they're like Venezuela with nuclear weapons. Their weak economy means they aren't a real threat to the United States, that Russia supposedly is weak. Is this myth that if a country is economically the strongest country, therefore it is also the militarily strongest country too? I think we'll find from history that that's not true. Russia is the most heavily armed state in the world. Russian conventional forces outnumber those of NATO in Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, Romania, Poland, Germany, Belgium, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, France, and the United Kingdom combined. Add up the forces of all those countries I just named, and Russia has a bigger army than all of them. More tanks, more troops, more airplanes than all of them. And Russia is supposed to be weak because its economy is not as good as Germany's? Please. Russia is the world's strongest nuclear superpower, having at least twice as many nuclear weapons as the United States. At least twice as many. They have a 10-to-1 advantage, at least, in tactical nuclear weapons. 10-to-1. And that's at least. You know, the United States dismantled most of its tactical nuclear weapons during the Cold War. We used to have 15,000 tactical nuclear weapons. and it's down to fewer than 200 now. You know, the Russians have at least 2,000 tactical nuclear weapons versus fewer than 200 for the United States. There are some estimates that the Russians have at least 7,000 tactical nuclear weapons. That would give them a 35-to-1 advantage in nuclear weapons over the United States. And now we're finding out that they cheated on the START treaties. And they may have twice as many strategic nuclear weapons as we have. 3,000 against 1,500 for the United States. And the quality of those nuclear weapons, both their strategic and tactical nuclear weapons, are far more advanced than those of the United States. Their nuclear weapons, their nuclear warheads, and their delivery systems are new. They're new. We don't have any counterparts to some of these things. They're designed for special effects like EMP and neutron radiation. They're clean. They generate very little fallout. So they've got, in addition to the numerical advantage in their nuclear weapons, they've got a huge technological lead. How did they get that lead? Well, it seems that recently the chief of the Defense Intelligence Agency said that Russia has been cheating on the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty for almost 30 years. So they've got a 30-year lead over the United States in developing nuclear weapons of advanced technology. And Russia is supposed to be weak because it has an economy that is inferior to ours, with these huge advantages in their army and their tanks and their air forces and their nuclear weapons and their technology. Again, it doesn't make any sense.
So that's Dr. Peter Vincent Pry from this news desk warning, well, that Russia is not a weak nation. Many think that because their economy isn't that strong, that means their military isn't strong. There's many things we're going to talk about right now with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry joining us live. We'll talk about electromagnetic pulse. We'll talk about Iran, Russia, China, the hypersonic sixth generation technology that Russia's developing, China's nuclear advancement, their aircraft carrier, their ships. There's so much going on. Little North Korea, what they're doing. Folks, this is very, very important information and something that really most Americans are not aware of, and we better wake up real fast. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry joins us tonight from his log cabin. Dr. Pry, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Brandon.
Well,
always a pleasure.
It is always a pleasure to have you as well, sir. And I think you just came off of a great interview for the second time with Mark Levin this past weekend, did you not?
Yes.
Hopefully got
a great one, an EMP warrior, and he's been a great assistance in letting me use his show together to try to educate the American people about the existential threat to our electric grid and critical infrastructures from EMP and cyber warfare.
Yeah, well, I'm glad he's giving you that platform. You well deserve it. You write often for the Washington Times, among other publications. And, of course, we produce your TV show here as well as your weekly radio show. Folks, you'll find his weekly radio show at worldviewradio.com. You'll find his TV show at WVWTV.com. Dr. Pry, let's start out with that they just saw, this six-minute clip of you talking about, with a lot of B-roll footage of the advanced weaponry, particularly in relation to the ICBMs that Russia has, and also their hypersonic weapons, and this idea that, you know, their economy's weak, therefore they're weak. But you were just laying out in that clip we watched, they have a lot more tactical weapons than we have, and more ICBMs. Would you bring us some more information on that?
Right. It's a conceit of nations, which are mercantile nations like our own, mercantile civilizations throughout history, to think that because, you know, we are wealthier than a heavily armed adversary, that they are weak. And so we constantly find journals like the Washington Post and the New York Times talking about Russia as being really weak. Even President Obama derided Russia as weak because their economy is weak, ignoring their great military strength. And that is a strategic miscalculation of historic proportions. Because throughout history, there have been basically two kinds of nations. There have been mercantile nations like us, whose focus is not on military power, but it's on having the good life, building up wealth, trade, doing things that give your population a good standard of living. And so we pile up our wealth. And then there are what you might call the predator nations. And their object is not to become wealthy. Their object is to conquer their neighbors. Their object is to maximize their military strength. And throughout history, the mercantile nations have tended to fall to the predator nations. You know, you can go back to the Peloponnesian War between Sparta and Athens. You know, Sparta was basically a military dictatorship. They had no trade. They had no great fleet. They were really a poor nation, but they were rich in military power because they had the best army in Greece. And guess who won the Peloponnesian War? It was the Spartans won the Peloponnesian War, and they destroyed Athenian democracy. Rome, which we now look back at as, you know, a great wealthy empire, but it didn't start off that way. Rome started off as an impoverished city that could barely feed its own people. And, you know, and it built a great military power so it could conquer its neighbors and take what it needed. And that's how they became an empire that conquered the world. And before both Romans and Sparta, by the way, most people haven't heard of the Assyrians, you know, but during the Bronze Age, all right, during the Old Testament times, the Assyrian Empire, you know, went up against places like Babylon and Ur, nations which no longer exist, okay, but they're in the Old Testament. The Assyrians no longer exist either, but the Assyrians were masters of military might. They built the first professional army. They built siege machines. They were utterly ruthless, and they came out of their impoverished mountain fastnesses and conquered the whole known world at the time and enslaved the whole known world for 1,000 years. Okay, so this is a pattern that repeats often in history. And we should have learned from our own experience in our own lifetimes that there is no correlation between wealth and military power. Look at the Korean War. How economically powerful is North Korea compared to the United States? They're a pygmy compared to the United States, but they nearly won the Korean War all on their own, okay? Because they're highly militarized, they had T-34 tanks that were better than the Shermans that they'd gotten from the Russians. And they did fight us to a standstill, a draw when China came in. And China's not an economic power, not back then. You know, China was not a strong economic power back then. You know, they were a Venezuela-type economy at the time. So now we face Russia. And yes, in terms of economic measures, you know, they are economically weak compared to us. But in terms of military power, even our own war games show, you know, that Russia can roll over the frontline NATO states in 72 hours, and we can't stop them. They've got advanced nuclear weapons that are far beyond anything we've got. All of their nuclear weapons are modern. They have a 10-to-1, at least a 10-to-1 advantage in tactical nuclear weapons. We've only got 200 obsolete. This reminds me, you know, in talking about the balance of power between Russia and America and the people that just point to our economic power, reminds me about that scene in Gone with the Wind, you know, when they're talking about the advantages and disadvantages of the North and South. You know, when the Southerners say, you know, any Southerner can take on 10 Yankees, okay, because of their superior culture, basically. And Rhett Butler reminds them, well, you know, the Yankees have got more cannons than we do, and they've got a fleet to bottle up our ships. You know, those military material advantages count vastly more than an economy that has to be translated into, you know, World War III isn't going to give us time to translate that economic power into military power. World War III can be over in half an hour and decided by nuclear weapons, decided by cyber attacks and EMP attacks, that can be over in half an hour. And the poverty, Russia's poverty, we should be afraid of that, you know, because the whole motive all across history, you know, for these countries to build up their military strength, you know, is so that they can conquer wealth, conquer the wealthy countries. You know, their poverty makes them more dangerous, not less. And so it's just so absurd that people will point laughingly. Some people have compared Russia to a trailer park armed with nuclear weapons, you know. That shouldn't make us sleep easy at night. You know, a country like that has invested all of its wealth in military power has got to use that military power someday, probably someday soon, you know, because they can't sustain that superiority forever. You know, at some point, they've got to say it's now or never and roll the dice.
Well, in fact, you've been warning that the new way of warfare is the way they'll start. Dr. Pry appears in my six-hour docu-movie, Siege, the clear and present dangers pushing America to the brink of a Marxist Islamic revolution, civil war, and World War III. It came out in 2018. Tonight, in the third hour, after I interview Diamond Silk, I'm going to show you 27 minutes that I've edited down to show you how the communists have marched around the globe, penetrated America, and what we're facing right now. You're going to see some very historic clips by some retired generals and admirals in a very older documentary hosted by then John Wayne, warning how we lost the Vietnam War, the Korean War, how we got where we are today, folks. You know, it's sad, but this is where we're at. And Dr. Pry is one of the people that's been warning about that. Dr. Pry, you, and we're going to show some B-roll footage here now as while you're talking. We got some incredible footage of Vostok 18. You said in our documentary Siege at from this news desk that you believe Vostok 18, the military exercise between Russia and China, was perhaps the largest military exercise in world history back in 2018. A lot of people talk about who's a greater threat, China or Russia. I often say to people, when you're talking about Russia, you're talking about China. When you talk about China, you're talking about Russia. They're in military alliance together. Now they've done military exercises with Iran. But before we get to that, tell us about Vostok 18, sir.
Right. Vostok 18 may well be the largest military exercise in history. 300,000 troops, 20,000 tanks, armored vehicles, and other kinds of vehicles, over 1,000 aircraft, and 100 ships, 150 ships, all participated, plus the strategic rocket forces. Later, it went nuclear, and there was a nuclear phase. And many analysts believe, and I think this is true, they actually folded into the exercise an actual war. You know, they were firing off new cruise missiles into Syria, you know, when this was going on, to attack members of the Syrian people that were opposing terrorists, so-called terrorists. We would call them freedom fighters. They called them terrorists. But basically, attacking our Syrian Liberation Army, okay, to uphold the Saddam government. So they actually had a little war was folded into part of this enormous exercise. And while the exercise was conducted in Siberia, it looked a lot like they were probably practicing an invasion of NATO, you know, which was what it was, because they were doing things like bridging huge rivers in Siberia, demonstrating they could do that. They had biological warfare and nuclear and radiological warfare units that were cleaning up simulated radioactive chemical and biological waste. You know, all the obviously there's no enemy out there except China, but China was their partner in this. China and Russia were ganged up fighting someone, and it was probably us. And it's not the first big exercise Russia and China have had together. They've had a friendship treaty for more than a decade. Yet Washington can't get it through its head, you know, that Russia and China are strategic partners. They exercise together. Much of Russia's military, much of China's advanced military technology is not only stolen from us, but it was sold to them by Russia. You know, advanced fighter planes, advanced missiles, you know, MIRVed ICBMs. A lot of that technology they did get from us, stolen from us, but they've also been helped tremendously by Russia. And so when we think about a World War III, where we are probably looking at a new bloc, the new Cold War, the new bloc, the new totalitarian bloc in the new Cold War is Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, and international terrorism. Those guys all coordinate their policies. They all work together. There's technology transfers going on between them, you know, to help build up the North Korean and Iranian forces. And that's what we face. And when and Washington can't seem to get that through their head. You know, they repeatedly act as if we can play the China card against North Korea or the Russia card against China. when in fact, these nations are already strategic allies. And we pretend as if, well, it's not as good as the NATO alliance, because they have conflicting interests. Well, look at how bad the NATO alliance is. You know, we can't even get the NATO alliance to pull its own weight, in terms of their military spending. And look at how they treated President Trump, talk about divisions within an alliance. And it's just amazing to me how the big brains in Washington, think that the NATO alliance is some kind of super alliance. There was a time when it was an excellent alliance back in the Cold War, but no more. Those days are long gone and past. I think that Russia and totalitarian states have proven, like in World War II, that they can be good allies together. It doesn't matter that they have profound ideological differences. They don't even believe their own ideologies. What they mainly want is power. That's what their whole, even their ideologies are about, gaining power and disarming your adversaries intellectually and providing an ideal around which you can rally people to give up their lives in a huge world war. But the elites are usually pretty cynical and don't really believe these ideologies any more than they believe the constitutions, the fake constitutions that their governments have. It is all about gaining power, establishing a totalitarian level of power. And that's a very formidable thing to face when you're looking at multiple totalitarian states pooling their willpower together and their material and military power together to face us. One of the factors that is non-material is willpower. Willpower is really important, and totalitarian states have a lot of it, and we should have learned that in the Vietnam War.
Dr. Pry is author of the book, The Power and the Light. I'm going to show you several of his books, by the way. This is his most recent book. It's also available in hardcover. You can get them at Amazon. The Power and the Light. And, of course, if you like having power and you like having lights, you might want to read this. By the way, let me read you his bio real quick. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is executive director of the EMP Commission. That stands for Electromagnetic Pulse. We'll get into that in a minute. EMP Task Force on National and Homeland Security, a congressional advisory board, and served as chief of staff of the commission to assess the threat to the United States from electromagnetic pulse attack. As professional staff and subject matter expert on House Armed Service Committee, Dr. Pry organized hearings on EMP that led to the establishment of the EMP Commission. Dr. Pry served in the Central Intelligence Agency from 1985 to 1995 as an expert on, listen now, Soviet and Russian nuclear weapons and strategy, and as a Central Intelligence Agency's senior analyst on EMP. Dr. Pry also helped establish and served on the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission and director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Dr. Pry's books include EMP Manhattan Project, Poseidon, which is right here, Russia's New Doomsday, Russia's New Doomsday Weapon Strategy. He's got many other books I'll list here. The Long Sunday, which is subtitled Nuclear EMP Attack Scenarios. He is author of this book right here, Blackout Wars. He's author of this book right here, Apocalypse Unknown. And this one right here, Electric Armageddon and Outcomes. And he's also author of the book, Strategic Nuclear Balance, subtitled, And Why It Matters. He's also author of the book, Israel's Nuclear Arsenal. Dr. Pry often appears on TV and radio as an expert on national security issues. The BBC made his book, War Scare, into a two-hour TV documentary, Soviet War Scare, in 1983. His book, Electric Armageddon, was the basis for another TV documentary, and then Electronic Armageddon by National Geographic. So this is my guest and friend, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. We produce his TV show, at least I do, produce his TV show here in my organization. And we're bringing him to the Lindell TV audience tonight. For some of you, this may be your first introduction to him. That's his bio. Maybe some of you saw him this last Sunday night on Fox News on with Mark Levin. Dr. Pry, all of your books are available, I know, at Amazon.com. Let's talk quickly about the attack on the Colonial Pipeline, because that certainly caught a lot of people's attention. You believe that was Russia. Again, you warned in the documentary Siege that you're in that this you have the old way of warfare and the new way of warfare. And you believe that even with that Vostok 18, Russia and China practiced before that the new way of warfare with things like Operation Dragonfly, where they were hacking into our power grid, which finally they admitted in the Trump administration, China and Russia were hacking into our power grid. You think they practiced before Vostok 18 the new way of warfare, and then you say in my documentary Siege that if the new way of warfare doesn't work, let the missiles fly and the tanks roll, and you say that they were practicing a nuclear strike on NATO and the United States. So you have the new way of warfare, the old way of warfare. This new way of warfare, it really has already begun. You said at this news desk and said that World War III had already begun when you have China and Russia hacking on our power grids. That's an act of war, or at least it should be considered an act of war, you said. And now we have what you believe is an attack by Russia on that colonial pipeline. Can you speak to that issue, that attack?
Sure. Going back to Vostok 18, that's absolutely right. One of the interesting things about Vostok 18 is that it was highly visible. And a huge demonstration of strength by China and Russia of traditional ways of fighting war with conventional weapons and with nuclear weapons. But what was perhaps most interesting is what they didn't want us to see. And that was the new way of warfare that involved cyber attacks to try to penetrate our grid. Hundreds of utilities were attacked, U.S. electric utilities, a couple of months before Vostok. In fact, it was only 1 month before Vostok 18 happened. And so, you know, what I think they were doing was practicing the new way of warfare to see if they could, how well they could penetrate our utilities, so they could possibly shut down the electric grid, which would crash all of the life-sustaining critical infrastructures in the United States. With no electricity, you can't have communications, transportation, industry doesn't work, there's no food and water, you'll run out of food very quickly and the water stops immediately, fuel oil pipelines won't work, and our military power would be crippled. You know, because 99% of the energy, of the electricity that our military bases utilize comes from all these civilian critical infrastructures. And they can't run without electricity. It would paralyze our military. And so the plan is to win World War III at close to the speed of light with a combination of cyber and EMP attacks so that they don't even have to do battle with the Marines, with the Navy, with the Army, with the Air Force. All of this would be paralyzed. And the clock would start ticking toward the extermination of our civilization. Because if they can turn off the electric grid for a year, we would lose up to 90% of our population through starvation, disease, and societal collapse. So, in effect, you could win World War III in less than 24 hours and achieve their ultimate goal, which is to eliminate the United States as an actor on the world stage so that the bad guys, Russia and China, and their allies would now dominate the world order, a new world order run by totalitarian states. Now, how does Colonial Pipeline fit into this? And I just think, and I can't believe that even the Biden administration is so stupid that they don't know that it was an attack by Russia. I believe they're just trying to cover up the fact that they want to deny that it was an attack from the Kremlin, you know, because it puts them in a humiliating situation. You know, it would acknowledge and demonstrate that Russia can attack our critical infrastructures and that the Biden administration is helpless to do anything about it. Let's put this into context. You know, people, the press anyway, has such short memories. Let's not forget, why am I so convinced that the Kremlin shut down the Colonial Pipeline, even though the Biden administration says, oh no, it was just some criminal gangs in Russia that did it for $90 million. Well, first, let's not forget that in December, you know, we discovered the Solar Winds hack that was done by Russia, possibly in conjunction with China, you know, which is the, up until that moment, you know, it was the greatest cyber attack on the United States in history, which penetrated hundreds of federal agencies and 18,000 private sector institutions including electric and gas utilities, all kinds of utilities, and we didn't even know about it for 9 months. You know, it didn't just happen in December. It started 9 months earlier than that. And it wasn't until December that we figured out that Solar Winds Hack was roaming around the halls of all these federal departments and agencies and all these utilities doing what? You know, we still don't really know. Now, the Biden administration has tried to put the best face on that and say, oh, they were just gathering intelligence. I hope so, but I doubt it very much for 9 months. That was a golden opportunity for them to install malware, you know, just like they did before Vostok 18, you know, where we're still not sure what Dragonfly does. You know, they probably started installing malware in many utilities back then, and this was continuing that process. Malware are things like logic bombs and worms. It's not for gathering intelligence. It's actually for doing things like shutting down electric grids, shutting down pipelines, shutting down your communications capabilities by attacking, you know, the websites and the microelectronics that sustain these things. Now, so that's one thing. We know that there was Solar Winds. The Solar Winds hack happened, you know, just a few months ago, and the consequences of that have not yet been seen. Maybe the Colonial Pipeline is related to that. Now, one of the first things that the Biden administration said it was going to do when it came into office, in the first week, they said, we're going to retaliate for the Solar Winds hack. You know, we're going to hit Russia back. And Russia said, no, you're not. You'd better not do that. Because first they denied that they did the Solar Winds hack. But they also said, you know, if we get in a cyber war, we will win it because we can hit you back harder. And then we didn't hear any more from the Biden administration about retaliating against Russia, did we?
No.
I mean, I don't, you know, it was just sort of all forgotten. And then we had the Ukrainian crisis, you know, where Russia mobilized its forces, said it was just doing a big exercise. But even the Biden administration, which tends to try to look on the best, put everything in the best possible light, even the Biden administration became afraid because the scale of that exercise, it looked like Russia might be getting ready to roll right over Ukraine. And who knows, possibly invade NATO, attack the frontline NATO states. And as I had mentioned before, even our own war games have shown that we can't win, you know, a war with Russia in Ukraine or in the frontline NATO states. That they can roll over Ukraine and the frontline NATO states. That is the Baltic, Poland, you know, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Romania, all those frontline NATO states that we've taken into NATO, they can roll right over them and take that area back in 72 hours. And there's really nothing we can do about it. And in the middle of this Ukrainian crisis, the Biden administration started making noises like, you know, we were going to intervene. We weren't going to let them get away with that. And then Russia made a cyber threat. This happened about 3 weeks ago, just 3 weeks ago at the height of the Ukrainian crisis. A lady named Margarita Simonyan, she is the spokesman for the media giants RT and Sputnik. And she's a personal friend of Putin. She's received many medals from Putin, has a very close relationship with the Kremlin. In effect, you know, these are not independent media voices. These are state-run media. And she's basically an unofficial spokesman for the Kremlin. And she went on television for an interview and said, a cyber war between the United States and Russia is inevitable. And we will win it. We would crush the United States in a cyber war because we're much better prepared to wage one, and they're not prepared to defend against one or to wage one.
Is she right?
Yes, she is right. And I'll explain why later, but let me finish with the thought. And she gave a range of reasons of options, cyber attack options that were available to Russia as examples. You know, she said, you know, we could do a demonstration against the United States by shutting out the lights in Harlem, shutting down the electric power to Harlem in New York. Or we could make a bigger demonstration by blacking out all of Florida. Or, you know, we could go all out and black out the whole United States and win the war that way, right off the bat, with a cyber attack. And we wouldn't even need to use our nuclear weapons, she said. So that was 3 weeks ago. And now, suddenly, the Colonial Pipeline is hacked. All right? I mean, I don't think it takes a genius to connect those dots from solar winds, well, from Vostok 18 to solar winds, you know, to the threats against Biden where Biden backed off. Then the Biden administration started to try to get muscular, you know, over the Ukrainian crisis. And then they warned us again. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that what Russia is doing with the Colonial Pipeline hack is demonstrating that they're not bluffing, that they can actually do it. And by the way, why the Colonial Pipeline hack? Well, it provides 45% of the petroleum products, including jet fuel, you know, and gasoline, and the fuel that our Navy needs, okay? It's not just civilian. It's not just our gas stations, which is what everybody talks about. The military depends upon that, too. All of our East Coast military facilities, that's where most of our power projection capability is for providing support to NATO and Ukraine. If we were going to get involved in the Ukraine war, or if we were going to defend the frontline NATO states, you know, it's obvious that one of the things you'd want to do is shut down things like the Colonial Pipeline to neutralize and paralyze our power projection capabilities on the East Coast. What a coincidence. So and I don't think that Russia is interested, the Kremlin isn't interested in the $90 million that was paid in bribes. That's just more cover. What they want is plausible deniability, you know. They're not going to come out and do this and in a way that's very provocative. That's one of the beauties of cyber warfare, because it leaves some level of doubt about who is the aggressor. You know, we're probably 95% sure about Solar Winds hack, but you know, it's possible it could have been a false flag. Maybe the Chinese were really, really behind it. You know, it's very difficult to do the forensic analysis on these things. But anyway, this one appears we're, you know, probably 95% sure that this hack of Colonial Pipeline was by Russia. And yes, the groups that are associated with it are criminal groups. But these criminal groups work for the Kremlin. The Russian mafia is a tool of Russian intelligence and of the Russian military apparatus. It's not like our mafia that we have no control over. You know, they have control over these guys. They're an asset of the Russian totalitarian state. The people that are really behind the Colonial Pipeline hack are probably, it's either the GRU, which is Russian military intelligence, or the SVR, which is the successor to the KGB. And they're using these criminal gangs as front operations, you know, to do their dirty work. The North Korea does the same thing. China does the same thing. You know, they try to run these cyber attacks, not directly from government sources, but they try to run them even from other countries. For example, the attacks on that were on the Colonial Pipeline were coming out of servers in Eastern Europe. You know, but if you trace them back, they were only being funneled through servers in Eastern Europe from these Russian sources. That's another attempt to use the cyber warfare strategy to distance yourself, you know, so you can have plausible deniability and create some doubt in the mind of the adversary that you did it. Or maybe they don't even care that we know 100% for sure that they did it, but it's not an overt in your face kind of a thing.
Right.
You know, there's an old saying about the best revenge is served cold, you know. And the Russians are chess players, so the indirect approach is part of their strategic culture.
Let's talk about China. We've talked a lot about Russia. Now let's talk about China. I do want to come back to China on Poseidon before we conclude here. We got about 45 minutes, folks, and then we'll be joined in the next hour by Diamond and Silk, and then a 27-minute. A shortened documentary that I produce. It's 6 hours long. I want to play 27 minutes to show you how the communists have marched around the globe. That includes old video footage by John Wayne and some retired generals and admirals explaining how within our own government, we surrendered. We had people inside our own government surrendering during the Korean War and then during Vietnam, which set us up for where we are today. But let's talk about China. Where is China with their ability for cyber hacking, as well as the new wave warfare, as well as where is their military going with all these ships they're building, military aircraft. I don't know if they're aircraft carriers, but they're some kind of gigantic military ships. You tell us.
Well, I don't think China is quite as advanced as Russia, but they're more advanced than us, you know, when it comes to cyber warfare and the new way of warfare. Definitely far more advanced than us. They do have very sophisticated cyber warfare capabilities in terms of logic bombs, the ability to penetrate our departments and agencies. And, you know, they've demonstrated the capability to do that during the Obama years, you know, stealing tens of millions of personnel files, for example, from the federal government, you know, and so they've done a lot of cyber attacks on the United States that have been extremely aggressive. To our knowledge, they haven't shut down any pipelines or caused any blackouts. That's a new escalation. And by the way, if you look at the trend of these things, every 4 to 6 months, there's some new big cyber attack from Russia or China or North Korea that happens on the United States. Then Washington gets all excited about it for a while and swears they're going to do something. And then nothing gets done. And the next time, the next attack is more aggressive. And now they've actually shut down a pipeline. So this trend is extremely disturbing. They're obviously testing us and pushing the envelope to see how much can they get away with. In terms of the EMP dimension of the new way of warfare, the Chinese have super EMP weapons, as do the Russians, as do the North Koreans. You know, these weapons are capable of generating this electromagnetic pulse that is, it's categorized by Russia and China and Iran and North Korea as a cyber weapon. We don't think of it that way because you use a nuclear weapon to generate the electromagnetic pulse, the nuclear kind of electromagnetic pulse. But most people don't understand that this isn't the use of a nuclear weapon like in Hiroshima or Nagasaki where you're blowing up a city. You know, it's a weapon of special design. It can be very low yield, you know, 1 to a few kilotons. And it's detonated in outer space. It's not detonated in the atmosphere or on the Earth. And so if you were standing on the surface of the Earth directly beneath the explosion that's going off a few hundred kilometers over your head, you wouldn't even hear it because it's going off in the vacuum of space. The blast would be so small that you might not even see it unless you were looking at the right spot in the sky at the right moment. And if it was a cloudy day or a very bright sunshiny day, you might not see anything at all and wouldn't even know you were being attacked. There'd be no radioactive fallout. There'd be no blast. There'd be no thermal effects. The only thing that would happen is this electromagnetic pulse, which is like a super energetic radio wave that's got so much energy in it, you know, that it will destroy electronics across a vast area. A super EMP weapon detonated at 300 kilometers over the center of the United States would create an electromagnetic field at the speed of light that would cover all the contiguous 48 United States, most of Canada, and a good chunk of Mexico, and destroy electronics, crash electric grids, your car wouldn't start, communications would fail, there'd be no running water because you need vast amounts of electricity to run and purify water. Nuclear reactors would shut down and go Fukushima in 7 days. Natural gas pipelines would stop working. In fact, many of them would, their skaters would spark, and you'd have vast explosions of natural gas pipelines, possibly firestorms in cities wherever you have natural gas. So enormous, in effect, an EMP subtracts from the equation of modern civilization electronic technology. And we're an electronic civilization. We cannot survive without electricity anymore. We can't sustain a population of 330 million people without electricity. You know, the EMP Commission tried hard to think about, well, how can we keep 330 million people alive for a year without electricity, which is the same thing as saying keep them alive with no food and water for a year. Well, you can't do it. You know, and that's why we calculated that you'd lose up to 90% of the population if you had a year-long blackout. So China has that ability, Russia has that ability, even North Korea
has that ability. How about Iran with the Shahab missile?
I believe, as do my colleagues who served on the EMP Commission, for example, Dr. William Graham, who was the chairman of the EMP Commission. He's the free world's foremost expert.
Worked in the Reagan administration, right? Worked in the Reagan administration?
He was President Reagan's science advisor. And he ran NASA, okay? And when I was in kindergarten, he was a defense scientist at the Starfish Prime high-altitude nuclear test where we discovered the EMP phenomenon. And he's been working that field all his life. But he's one example. My friend and former boss, Jim Woolsey, Ambassador Jim Woolsey, who was the director of the CIA, Ambassador Henry Cooper, the director of the Strategic Defense Initiatives, Fritz Ehrmarth, who was the chairman of the National Intelligence Council under Ronald Reagan. These are the great minds that that helped win the Cold War. They were leaders in winning the Cold War. And they're warning us now that Iran probably already has the bomb. You know, we've published a couple of articles over the years warning that Iran isn't just close to the bomb, but they probably already have the bomb. In fact, we think they probably have had the bomb since 2003, and they've been building more bombs secretly since then. And why do we say that? It's really bewildering to me that everybody doesn't believe as we do on this, you know, because if you understand nuclear weapon design, you know, it's pretty obvious that Iran already has the bomb. Because back before 2003, Iran had demonstrated an implosion device. That is, you know, they had developed a device that can crush a uranium sphere down to critical mass, okay? That's a very hard thing to do. In fact, that's the core technology for a nuclear weapon. And they had that already in 2003. They were building neutron initiators, which is another part of an atomic bomb. You know, they were building bridge wire detonators, which is another part of an atomic bomb. Back in the Manhattan Project, the project that wherein in World War II, when the United States built the first atomic bombs, okay? And they were just, we didn't even know if we could build atomic bombs in the Manhattan Project. They were just theoretical at that time. They were just a gleam in Albert Einstein's eye. But with 1940s era technology, you know, we were able to build two atomic bombs of different design in just 3 years, all right? Well, Iran, by 2003, had reached the place that we were when we in the Manhattan Project, when we got to that point where when we were building implosion devices and bridge wire detonators and neutron, we were 6 months from the bomb. So, you know, Iran was 6 months from the bomb before 2003. And not only that, but before 2003, we also know that they were designing a warhead to fit on the Shahab-3 medium-range missile. That was their best missile. And there was a very funny thing they were doing in designing this warhead. They came up with more than a dozen designs, changing the design of the bomb, the physics package as it's called, to fit inside the high explosive warhead for the Shahab-3. You know, changing the way, what would be the most efficient way of changing the bomb design to fit inside this high explosive reentry vehicle? Why would you do that? It's much easier to change the shape of a reentry vehicle than it is to change the shape of an atomic bomb. And as a matter of fact, all of those designs would have worked that they were playing with. You know, again, it seems obvious to me what they were doing is what they wanted to do was have a bomb that would fit inside the high explosives warhead so they could take the chemical high explosives out and put an atomic bomb in there. But from the outside, to our satellites, it would look just like a normal high explosive warhead. So we believe that not only do they already have the bomb, but they probably have deployed at minimum, you know, nuclear weapons on the Shahab-3 medium range missile, which is their longest range missile at this point, or at least it was. You know, just I believe it was either in December or January, they've now demonstrated the ability to orbit a satellite over the United States. So that's really bad news.
Yeah.
You know, because that's probably one of the best ways of delivering an EMP attack, to do it by satellite.
And you think that North Korea, with their two satellites circling, they may already have a nuclear weapon on a satellite that passes over the U.S., right?
Yes, that was one of the main warnings of the EMP Commission. There are these two North Korean satellites, the KMS-3 and KMS-4, that pass over us several times a day, and they're on a this south-north trajectory. You know, in other words, they pass over the South Pole, and they approach us from the south, traveling northward. You know, and that trajectory evades our ballistic missile early warning radars, and it evades our missile interceptors. Because we have no ballistic missile early warning radars or interceptors facing south, we're blind and defenseless from that direction. The first warning we would have is if they lit off one of those satellites to do an EMP attack. The satellites are also flying at the optimum altitude, you know, about 300 to 400 kilometers altitude when they pass over us, to put that EMP field down over all the United States. So we're very concerned that the KMS-3 and KMS-4, you know, could be nuclear armed for EMP attack. And there's a lot of things that the North Koreans have said about those satellites that also lead us to believe that they may be nuclear armed for EMP attack. You know, when they're talking to us, you know, openly, you know, they describe them as peaceful satellites for investigating forestation or something like that over the United States. Why they would be interested in that, who knows? But in reality, those satellites and their whole space program are part of the North Korean strategic rocket forces. And during the 2013 crisis with the United States, when it was all hands on deck in North Korea, they mobilized their space launchers and were getting ready to launch another satellite. You know, so their behavior is as if these things are are part of their nuclear inventory.
Absolutely. I got less than 3 minutes left. Less than 3 minutes, and two more things I want to cover real quick. Logan, start rolling the footage of Poseidon. Dr. Peter Pry has a book that you can get on Poseidon, Russia's New Doomsday Machine. He'll roll the footage of it. That's actual footage of the Poseidon that Pravda has promoted. Give me 60 seconds on Poseidon. Dr. Pry, give me 60 seconds on the Poseidon.
Well, this is one of the scariest pieces of technology ever developed. It's an unmanned submarine. The Russians call it a torpedo, but it's a nuclear-powered torpedo that has artificial intelligence, and it's been advertised as carrying a warhead, the most powerful nuclear warhead ever made, that may have a yield between 100 megatons and 200 megatons, all right? That's many times more powerful than any nuclear weapon in the United States. We don't even have a 1 megaton bomb anywhere in our arsenal, 1 megaton bomb. This is 100 to 200 megatons. The Russians, and its mission will be, when it's deployed, is to cruise up and down the east and west coasts of the United States. And then if there's a nuclear war, to detonate it, and it will raise radioactive tsunamis, radioactive tidal waves, that will inundate the east and west coasts of the United States and make them radioactive so that they will be uninhabitable for centuries. That's what the official Russian position is, on the Poseidon. It may be for that. I personally think that that's disinformation. You know, I do believe it carries an adjustable yield warhead that can go up to 100 megatons. The one mission they don't describe Poseidon as for is to go after our ballistic missile submarines. I think that's what the Poseidon is really meant to do. I think it's going to be there trailing our ballistic missile submarines so that when World War III happens, they can detonate the Poseidon and destroy our submarines, because a 100 megaton warhead will generate a tremendous underwater shockwave that will have a radius of more than 100 kilometers. You know, you don't even have to be close to a U.S. ballistic missile submarine. That was the one problem during the Cold War that they weren't able to solve: how to get our ballistic missile submarines that are at sea. That was the one thing they couldn't solve. They could get our ICBMs in a first strike. They could get the bombers in the first strike. They can do that today. But how do you get those submarines that are on patrol at sea? Well, this is the answer, I believe. I think this is what the real purpose is.
This is it right here, folks. If you want to read about it, this is it. This is what he's talking about right here. You can get it at Amazon by Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, Poseidon. Real quick, Dr. Pry, two more things. We won't have time to get into it, but I got to have you back to talk about America's nuclear triad What is the triad, real quick?
The triad is our land-based ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles, our strategic bombers, and our ballistic missile submarines. And each leg of the triad has a unique role to play. The most important part of the triad for deterring a surprise attack are the ICBMs. There's 400 of them. And they are the only part of the triad that is on constant alert, that's ready to go in just a few minutes. You know, and so they're ready for a surprise attack whenever it should happen. And they're all also difficult to destroy, not impossible for the adversary to destroy. They have been at risk since the 1980s, but there's 400 of them in hardened ICBM silos. You know, the enemy can attack them and probably can destroy the force, but in order to do it, they have to hit it with 400 warheads. So that's a big decision. It's a major attack option. But what the Democrats want to do is get rid of our ICBM force now. And that would reduce the American target set from more than 400 targets to just 5 targets. You know, 3 bomber bases and 2 ballistic missile submarine bases. You know, most of our submarines are not on patrol at sea every day. 2/3 of our submarines are at port. And none of our strategic bombers are on alert anymore. They're not on airborne alert. They're not on strip alert. It would actually take 3 days to fuel up and upload nuclear weapons to get our bombers ready. So if they get rid of the ICBMs, and that's an issue that's being debated right now in Congress, you know, if they get rid of the ICBM force, it will, even North Korea would be able to do a nuclear first strike against the United States.
And some of those even ICBMs are aging out, right? Dr. Barry, some of them are aging out. In another couple of years, the chances of them even firing start to become remote, right?
Well, yes. We the Minuteman III was deployed in 1970. It's 50 years old. And we just tried to test one at Vandenberg Air Force Base. Periodically, we try to test one to demonstrate to our adversaries that the force still works. And it didn't launch. You know, the missile aborted itself because there was something wrong with the missile. And and the Minuteman III, unfortunately, you know, we have to get along with it for the next 9 years because its replacement isn't going to be ready. It's called the Ground-Based Strategic Deterrent. Until 2029. The first of the replacements won't be ready until 2029. And the Democrats, this is a golden opportunity for the Democrats who want to get rid of our land-based ICBM force. Because all they have to do is not fund the Minuteman III replacement. And the Minuteman III will turn into junk in the silos. And so they can say, well, we're not banning the ICBM. We're letting you keep the Minuteman III. But in reality, the Minuteman III will just turn into junk. It's already an obsolete system.
Wow. Okay, Dr. Peter Vincent Price, you can see we could go for hours, but he's got his book Poseidon, his book Apocalypse Unknown, Electric Armageddon. You can get that. Brand new one, The Power and the Light, Blackout Wars, all available at Amazon. He was on Mark Levin's Sunday Night. He's with us tonight. He's a good personal friend. I produce his TV show and radio show. You're going to be hearing from him more. His first appearance on Lindell TV, but he'll be back. We're just scratching the surface. I printed out a bunch of his articles. I got hours worth of questions I could shoot at him, things that you should know that the media is not telling you, but he will be back. If you appreciate what he's doing, will you go to Amazon.com, type in Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, purchase his books. This is partly how he does what he does, folks. Purchase these books. You need to read these books. You need to get up to speed on what's happening and then confront your Congress members of the U.S. Congress and the Senate when they come back into the district or the state. But you got to be up to speed. Maybe buy a few of these and put them in their hand if you can, right? Because, again, these are vital reports you need. So please go to Amazon, put in Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Look at these materials, buy these materials. They're valuable. You need to know about it. We, the American people, need to know about it. Dr. Pry, do you have a website you want to plug, or you just want them to go to Amazon?
I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy, and I believe in reading books. I encourage your audience to do the same.
All right. Well, I hope you'll do it.
Great idea to put the books into the hands of your members of Congress. Make them read the books. Make the government do its job.
There you go, folks. It's all here. He's done the research in these books right here, available at Amazon. They're great books. I have them, as you can see. You can tell I'm very interested in this topic. I've printed out lots of articles. He'll be back on Lindell TV. You can watch his TV show on my website at wvwtv.com. You can listen to his weekly radio show that I produce. for him over at worldviewradio.com and again, amazon.com to buy his books. Dr. Pry, thank you for your time. Look forward to having you back on Lindell TV.
Thank you so much for having me. I greatly appreciate it, Brandon.
No, the pleasure is all ours. Folks, you guys, you really ought to go read his bio and realize who it is I'm talking to right now and that he gave us his time tonight. It's amazing.